It's early January and the beginning of a new year, with all its hope and promise, even at a time when many of us are still housebound. A fitting time, perhaps, for telling a story. In the Creole tradition, a good story begins with a call, "Ew," and a response, "Ow." And this story, as my cousin Adrian puts it, along with our histories and genealogy, is a Nancy story containing the wisdoms expressed in a good Creole parable. But let us begin with the history and how, in 1791, one David Edmonds expressed jointly with the legendary Thomas Peters their hopes for one last Christmas in America in a letter that will be published in Christopher Fye's 1991 work, Our Children Free and Happy, Letters from Black Settlers in Africa in the 1790s.
Halifax, December the 23rd, 1791. The humble petition of the black people lying in Mr. Wisdom's store called the Annopolis Company, humbly beg that if it is consent to your honor, as it is the last Christmas day that we ever shall see in the America, that it may please your honor to grant us one day's allowance of the fresh beef for a Christmas dinner, that if it is agreeable to you and the rest of the gentlemen to whom it may concern, Thomas Peters, David Edmond.
We don't know if their request was met, but we do know that they set sail in 16 ships from Halifax, Nova Scotia on January 15th, 1792, and arrived at the Sierra Leone River in March 1792.
My name is Akindele Decker. I live in Maryland, in the U.S., and I work in the IT field. I'm also a writer. For now, it's what I do outside of, you know, my IT career, but I like to say that writing is my main passion. I'm also a family genealogist as well. I've been doing my family genealogy for about 15 years. Freetown is, I like to say Freetown is my gateway to the world. It's, you know, I was born there. In 1983, I'd say most of my more recent ancestors were also born there as well. So in essence, I'm a Freetown boy. I grew up there for many years, Moretown, Lumley, and other places. So it carries the best of my memories. For Zion, I'm connected to Zion in a way that I think many of us are connected to some of the churches in Sierra Leone. I was baptized in Jordan Methodist Church in Moretown. And in Sierra Leone, in Freetown especially, we have a very, very committed culture to our, you know, denominations. So I've always had a special place for Zion and other Methodist churches in Freetown. But more importantly, Zion has become a very important place, you know, especially over the years, recent years that I've been doing research into Freetown, the history of Freetown, the history of the 1792 settlers. And Zion has held a very special and important place in that subject.
Lady Huttenden's connection in Sierra Leone, a narrative of its history and present state, by J.B. Elliott of Freetown, Sierra Leone. Published by the Executive Committee of the Society for the Spread of the Gospel at Home and Abroad. Sparfield's Chapel Committee Room, 1851. Elliott writes, "The Society originated in Nova Scotia. Ministers were the Reverends Fomage and John Marant. The congregation consisted of about 1,131 who left behind them in Nova Scotia land and other properties which they could not dispose of to advantage, and for which the Sierra Leone Company promised to dispose of and remit them the money." He continues to describe how they were induced to emigrate from a document sent from the Court of Directors of the Sierra Leone Company, dated London, 2nd August, 1791, signed by Henry Thornton, William Wilberforce Granville Sharp, and 10 others, that promised certain advantages, which promised but were partially fulfilled.
Basically, reading through books or the different history books which I acquired, you know, over the last 2 years, that have and articles that have parts of our story, you know, the Zion story, the Zion family story, and different personalities. You know, it dawned on me that, I mean, they're very interesting stories, very inspiring stories, very heroic stories, very visionary stories there. But I was always reading them when the main character was always either a European man or some European men or some European institution. And so the information that they will, the snippets of information they will add about the members of Zion or even the settler folks, you know, it was just always to support some character statement. But, you know, but they're parts of actually a story that, and I said, we should tell this story in our own way. So I have a perfect example to explain this. And it's focused, and it was when I was doing the research for the first 10 years of Zion, since we have a section that we wanted to, because that's a very critical moment, the first decade. I came to appreciate it. Now, there's I'd shown you earlier a book where somebody wrote about the Wesleyan history of Sierra Leone, the origins of Wesleyan history in Sierra Leone. And believe me, the portion in which the Zion Church, College Chapel, preachers and congregation were all instrumental in the founding of what's today the Wesleyan, which these churches are all part of, kind of glossed over their participation, their crucial involvement. Almost, they truncated the founding story and left the Zion and the College Chapel out of it, and made it sound like only when a European Methodist person came across and was able to sort of start the process with the support of the Methodist conference in London, then things sort of started to happen. And so they made this story, the origins now sound more like it was that organized effort by the European guy who came, but literally 50 plus years before he came, the records show Methodism was developing by our folks, and they had picked up what you call the versions of Methodism, because what happened by the 1780s thereabout starting around the 1750s, 1760s, if you understand Methodist history, they start to have breakaways. And our folks had actually picked up two sets of breakaway Methodist theology before they left Canada. And so for the first 450 years, they built that up. Even before the John Wesley one, which is another breakaway, which actually became the dominant one, and which is what the Wesleyan Methodist is based on. But their efforts in that first 50 years, when they were developing what you call their own version, our African, their own version of these breakaway Methodists, some other congregations in Europe were doing the same thing. So imagine if the story was told, you could tell the story of our folks evolving the Methodist congregation even before some others were doing it in Europe. So I'm Adrian Quincy Labor. I am currently living in Maryland, US of A. Father of three kids, girls, and currently pursuing an engineering career. But over time, I've come to appreciate culture, heritage, and history, and I've picked up that as a hobby while I looked into some of my own background and of my ancestors and genealogy of our family. These few years were a perfect time for reflection, given the pandemic, and that kind of gave me the opportunity to pursue and go deeper into what was once a pastime, looking into history, culture, and heritage of Sierra Leone within West Africa, and it's all its various connections to the rest of the world and especially through the actions of people, family members, and relatives.
So, Adrian, if you could just tell me a bit about the Zion 230 initiative and just how that came about.
Yes, I think it happened in a very organic way in the end. I think for you to appreciate it or my involvement in it, it actually goes back to almost the first year of college, where a historian who's a mentor now, Ishmael Rashid, who was a graduate at the same university I was in Montreal, McGill University, Montreal, Canada, seemed to challenge me on what I knew about Sierra Leone, the Creole culture, and a host of other ethnic groups in Sierra Leone. And I realized I did not know much about our history, and that left a question to be answered in my mind. I pursued that. I tried to fill in the gaps very quickly and began to learn about the formation of Freetown. I began to understand the role of the Zion Church members in the formation of Freetown. And then, interestingly, the chronological timeline of the first settlers from the US through Canada to Sierra Leone to form Freetown in about 1792. And I ended up finding that the depository of a lot of that information that happened back in December, January, or March of 1792, January to March of 1792, was actually kept and stored at the university I was in a rare collection. And I spent some time there, and I was amazed to know that there was a lot of pre
planning, organization, from the groups that left Canada to Sierra Leone and everything that pursued. And it stayed in my back of my mind for probably another decade while I pursued my engineering.
Connectionalism is the theological understanding and foundation of Methodist ecclesiastical polity, as practiced in the AME, AME Zion, the United Methodist and Free Methodist Church in many countries around the world, where Methodism was established by missionaries sent out from these churches. The United Methodist Church defines connection as the principle that all leaders and congregations are connected in a network of loyalties and commitments that support yet supersede local concerns.
The story of Zion Church, Wilberforce, I don't think you can tell it without speaking about the equivalent, the College Chapel one. They were actually hand in hand. In fact, if you really want to do justice about the first effort and appreciate the Zion Chapel's own part in the efforts of the settlers, you actually may have to appreciate not only Zion College Chapel, but even the Baptist church which eventually was located somewhere in Regent Road, but the founding groups all started together. And so she wanted to evolve their congregation in North America, so she picked 8 people to go. One of them was this black guy called John Marant. So John came over to Georgia to try and with 8 to work. And whatever happened, whether it's part of him deciding to go up to Canada, or because it was during the American Revolution period, or himself got caught up and ended up there. But he did make it to Birchtown and ended up setting up the congregation there. But he did not go to Sierra Leone when the time came. It was Curtis Perkins, William and Mary Ash, and John Ellis were the leaders, and they came across as leaders of our church. Right beside them was the College Chapel own leaders, a blind guy called Moses Wilkinson, who also had support from another couple called Boston and Violet King. And in fact, they were the core folks of the choir. These groups of people and worked together. There was a third group, which was David George, the Baptist preacher. So when they all got to town, they worked together. We built a church on what's now known as Lot 47 or Lot 8, the very location where our church is. That's where they started. William Ash died early by drowning, but he left his land, which was next to the church, And Mary, when she died, it was passed on to the church. The only person of those three who stayed longer, was John Ellis. He lived till 1847.
My name is Ernest George Anthony Morgan. I am a 35-year-old science communicator living in Toronto. So my connection to Sierra Leone is through my father. He was born and raised there. He left when he was in his late teens. And I got to go back and visit for the very first time in 2019, just before the start of the pandemic, so for Christmas. And going around Christmas time meant that we got to go to church. And Zion Church was the most remarkable church that I had been to in Sierra Leone. It was gorgeous. I think that in order to move wisely through the world, our past has to color our future. We have to be able to tell ourselves stories about our past, the things we've experienced, the things that have shaped us, and only in doing so can we understand where it is that we want to go. So I think, you know, what does that mean for Zion Church? Well, I think that understanding where the church came from, why it was built, what it was meant to represent, is crucially important because it allows us to figure out whether we're on the right path. Understanding that purpose provides us with a kind of a North Star to make sure that we're aiming at and to check against whenever we're making decisions about how we navigate through the world.
The brethren Cater Perkins, William and Mary Ash, and John Ellis were instrumental in leading the Zion community through trying times with a hostile climate and attacks from neighbours and French firepower. The people maintained their love to the Saviour and looked upon these events as light afflictions, J.B. Eliot writes.
And the purpose is for a time like this, so that we can be a witness to the community, so that we can tell others about Jesus Christ, so that they will know that Jesus is Lord. Hallelujah. We are going to commit our lives to God, because the campaigns will blow towards the end of the year. Most people are sick. They are sick with cold and cough and flu. People cannot move.
Okay. Thank you, Adrian. I'm very much, very, very, very much impressed. And it happened in the own time as superintendent of the circuit. And above all, me not the only superintendent, but son of the soil, a descendant from Zion, working closely with since its origin when the remote land in our government was. So for that, I'm very, very much grateful. So this, what they would only show, I will therefore bring and come up at the leaders meeting. Make them know that when they out there, when they decide to do, when they do a website, also produce a magazine that will also depict the history of Zion Church and Passing Church. And also, we said that we will let follow, we collaborate. We come to the church, not the Unade, and any part of the church for the celebration, like, we probably decide to get the, a Zoom link for the dedication of the organ. Because they do the memorial service, when I want to come, we will get a place for the diaspora. They are sitting at the sea, and I will bring greetings from, you know, wherever you are, so that everybody, so that we know Zion all over. So at least we can look at the way Zion people all over can be part of the service.
This is Reverend Arnold Archer Campbell, current circuit superintendent of Freetown Central Circuit and Zion Methodist Church, Wilberforce Street. When that first congregation arrived in Sierra Leone on 28 March 1792, it was the start of the rainy season. Their only shelter was the sails of the vessels they arrived on. Pioneers from among them went ahead to clear a path through dense forest. Their temporary houses were soon blown away by tornadoes prevalent at the time. Anxious to procure an altar, the early settler congregations did just that. The place fixed upon was under the shade of a large greegree tree, then standing in George Street. There, they continued in worship of God with their brethren of the Methodist and Baptist societies and would build a chapel. These were men and women, families. Among them, names like Eliot, Hamilton, Archer, Morgan, Campbell, and Allen, and others. On March 27, 2022, the eve of Zion Church's 230th anniversary, current circumstances permitting, There will be a candlelight procession along the same routes those ancestors would have taken when they arrived, led by Kater Perkins, John Ellis, William and Mary Ash, all black people, the first who preached the gospel in Sierra Leone. And to them, J.B. Elliott writes, "Through God's blessings, we owe much gratitude." I'm Natasha Leopold, and you've been listening to Zion Freetown 230.
Gotta make it, to make it, to make it, to make it, to make something happen,
to make something happen,
to make something happen, let's make something happen. Word to
fight for gonna. Next time, we'll hear from historian Nigel Davis and join a conversation around an old family photograph. Later in the series, in Kingdom Wars and the Middle Passage, we'll learn about the Edmund story, from Guinea to Virginia. Till then, thank you for listening, and goodbye.